Golf Smarter Premium number 490, published on May 26, 2015. How to get great golf photographs for yourself with professional course photographer Aiden Bradley.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Aiden.
Thank you, Fred. I appreciate you having me by.
I appreciate you stopping by at the very last minute. I got an email that you were in town and jumped on the phone, said, you come by and pay us a visit.
No worries. Hopefully I can help out.
How long have you been focusing your photography on golf courses?
I have been shooting grass for approximately 25 years.
You got to be careful how you say that in California, you know.
Not that much fun.
25 years, you
yes,
say?
25 years.
And what were? But how long have you been a photographer?
Prior to that, I was a studio photographer, commercial work. I did cars, computers, products, food, among the work commercial photographers done. I had a studio in Santa Barbara, and I did that for, I think, about 15 years, and then realized that I had a passion for other things, other than photography. But growing up in Ireland, I played a lot of sports, soccer, rugby, tennis, golf. I was passionate about golf. And as a rule, I would get the normal magazines, and I would look at the images, and I thought, you know what, I think I can do that. Maybe I can give it a different twist. So I started to do some research into the industry, and I wasn't quite sure what aspect of the industry I wanted to get into, so I started to testing various markets. I got access to various tournaments, so I would shoot tournament play. But I found out that that was dog-eat-dog photojournalism at its worst. That was tough.
That's photojournalism. That's a completely different beast.
It is. And then I shot product for some of the bigger companies for a while, clothing and clubs. But then again, I wasn't doing anything different than I'd been doing all along. And I wanted to make that switch. And then a dear friend of mine procured access to a couple of courses in the San Diego area, and I shot that, and I really enjoyed the courses I shot. And then some other fellow heard that I had photographed a couple of courses, and he said, would you be interested in putting together a project for me? I want to sell postcards of golf courses to 10 different courses. So would you go there and shoot these for them? For a small, very small, very small.
Very insane.
Yes. I said, okay. And after that was done, then I realized, well, my goodness, now I have 12, 13, 14 courses. I have a portfolio. And I started to put together a marketing plan, and I sent out some pieces to the people who would buy my services. And over a period of time, little by little, I ran up the flag and they saluted. So that was about 25 years ago. And I'm happy to say that some of the courses I shot 25 years ago are still, to this day, using my images.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Now, that's value for the...
So is this a royalty situation, or do you get a one-time fee and see you later?
I'm afraid I wasn't that smart.
Oh.
But that's fine. It's good to see them still using them.
Well, have you gotten smarter? Or are you still doing it on a fee basis?
No. I put my legal upbringing to good use. So yes, over the years I have got a little smarter. I protect the integrity of the images. But
fabulous.
I'm still very easy to work with, pleasant to work with. Let me say that.
And those first jobs that you were getting, you were being hired by golf courses versus magazines or anything? I mean, who is doing the hiring?
The initial course, the portfolio that I put together, I was not hired. The first few I just shot on my own dime, just because I wanted to try it.
Sure.
And I ended up giving the images to them as a thank you. And I ended up on one particular course, which is quite well known, but to protect the innocent, I won't mention their name.
Okay, if I was going to...
They were suitably impressed, and they actually hired me three years on a row to come back and photograph the course. And that really got me a nice start, which is I'm very grateful for.
But when they call up and say, hey, we've got a charity event this Monday, can you come out and shoot it? It's, no, that's not what I do.
I don't shoot people.
Yeah, we don't do weddings and bar mitzvahs. We don't do charity events.
I have a phrase that I use. I'm not sure if it's appropriate, but I say...
Oh, I'm really good at bleeping if I need to.
Okay, I shoot grass, not ass.
Okay.
So it's
beep.
Sorry.
We're sending this over the internet. There are many things that are much worse than what you just said. And if I don't bleep it, if I do bleep it, you probably can figure out what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Oh, great. You mentioned that they wanted to have postcards done.
Yes.
I noticed on your website, golfcoursephotography.com?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which, if you're listening and you're near your browser, you've got to check out because the portfolio is spectacular. It's really beautiful stuff. But golfcoursephotography.com, you have a section on there called Post a Scorecard. When I started writing it down, I was like, post a scorecard, postcard, post a scorecard. I got it. So it worked. Tell me how that can, and how that works and how people can go and like, oh, good, I need a golf course. I need a bunch of postcards to send thank you notes type thing.
Well, actually, I think it was a better idea than it was in fruition because it was a concept that I came up with. And I thought that a lot of golf course photographers, when they take the images, they try to see if there's some life after the original usage, which would be for brochures or for a website. Selling prints, obviously, is one. Sometimes they put them on ceramic. So the clubs will do all sorts of things with the images to make a few extra shillings here and there. And I thought this would be a good idea, especially for people who would go to a golf course. Let's say someone from Minnesota, your cousin from Minnesota goes to Aviara in San Diego and absolutely has a great time. And all his buddies are back in Minnesota. It's in the winter. It's miserable, it's cold, and it's snowing. And he had a great round, and he actually had a hole-in-one on a par three, or just had his best round ever. Goes to the clubhouse. There he has the Post a Scorecard, which he can purchase 1, 5, 10, put in his card, his score, and send it off to his buddies and tease them back home.
That's great.
Or if you go to Ireland for 10 days and you want to keep, you know, your scores, and this is a neat way to do it, you can frame them. I thought it was a good idea, and there were a lot of people who said they thought it was a great idea, but obviously I didn't market it properly. I still have the trademark on it, and maybe I'll resurrect it another time, but it didn't fly. But it was
sorry.
It was like...
It will now.
Yes.
Now, your accent tells me you're not from California, but you're based in California now.
I live in Santa Barbara. I have since 1977.
What drew you out here?
I went to Santa Barbara to go to school.
Oh, okay.
I spent the first 22 years of my life in Ireland. Out of high school, I went straight to law school. I got a law degree, but then I wanted to travel a little bit. I had, like most Irish people, had itchy feet. And I spent some time in New Hampshire, which I fell in love with, and then Palm Springs. I went back and forth. I used to teach tennis and lawn bowling in both. And then I decided I'm having too much fun and I should do something a little bit more responsible. So I ended up enrolling at Brooks Institute Photography School in Santa Barbara. And I graduated from there in 1980. And after that, I did some high-tech photography, optical scanning and transmission electromicroscopy. And after that, I opened up a studio, which I had for 16 years. And then I decided it was time to go follow your heart.
So you have a wide breadth of experience in photography. It's not just focused on golf courses.
I didn't learn it all on an iPhone.
Yeah. Does that make you crazy? To see people on vacations and stuff and all they're doing is pulling out their phones to take pictures. It's like, that doesn't work.
I'm happy.
Even worse, their iPads.
I'm happy that they're happy. It serves a purpose. And look, in the olden days, you know, I used to shoot with 8x10, with 4x5, with beautiful film. I did all the stuff that a lot of people have done. And it was all about resolution and excellence. And we want it to be bigger and has to be gorgeous and sumptuous. And I still certainly admire, respect, and love that. But now, how do we view images?
Digitally.
On the computer, on our iPad, on our iPhone. Everything has got smaller. Soon on our watches.
Yeah,
everything
right.
has got smaller. There's an agency out of New Zealand that requests stock images, and they represent a lot of agencies throughout the world. They're kind of like a clearinghouse, I guess. And you can get a brief from them on a regular basis. And they're looking for specific images. And it's pretty cool. But oftentimes they will say, iPhoneography accepted. iPhoneography. So the $100,000 schooling you got in photography school and all everything that you learned is almost out the door now, because you can take this little machine that will give you gorgeous, beautiful, clear images. Now with 40 meg files on the thing, you know, and it's going to be down to this size. However,
yes,
you still have to have a good eye. You still have to understand lighting and
composition.
Composition.
And know how to hold steady.
None of that's going to go away.
Right.
I think these days, and I don't want to beleaguer the point, I think we are oversaturated with so many images on a daily basis that there is a certain dumbing down of quality in photography. By the same token, it has opened up a lot of other wonderful avenues.
Right, right. But, you know, I think it's not just focused on photography of the, I don't want to say dumbing down, but the oversaturation. Mm-hmm. I know as a video producer as well that you got to have video on your website or no one's going to look at it. No one's going to read anything anymore. Right. So there's so many different elements that, you know, people who have gone to school become proficient. And now, well, even like the news business, you know, it's like if the news is going to find somebody, it's, you know, somebody's going to tell them, but it doesn't mean that you have the credibility of a, you know, a New York Times who wants to make sure that they have their multiple sources. It's like, no, somebody said it. Okay. It's news.
Instant gratification.
And you got to beat the competition to the punch. It's really interesting how that works.
It's a brave new world.
Oof.
Across the board.
We're still here.
Yes, we are.
You know, I mean, we have an alternative to not celebrate this stuff is to not be here, to not age in another day, which I'm trying to, you know, I would like to continue aging as much as possible.
When you find that elixir, I'll have it last.
Yeah, right. You got a bottle of it over here. So I want to get into instruction. I would love to get tips and advice from you on taking pictures of golf courses, because I love to do that. But I want to hear more stories from you about places you've been and the grass that you've captured and places that you absolutely loved to go. So let's start with, has this given you the opportunity to travel around the world and take pictures of golf courses?
Oh, absolutely. Around this country and to the 14, 15, 16 other courses that I've been fortunate enough to be commissioned to go to photograph.
Really?
It has allowed me to get out, see different cultures, different food, different people, different architecture. Yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
And I want to go with you.
You check with your wife, do and you, I'll check with mine.
Do you travel with golf clubs too?
I used to. In the olden days when flying was much more fun and not as encumbering, if that's the correct word. And
yeah, flying's gotten tough. I don't like airports.
Yeah, I used to. I would take the clubs with me, depending on the schedule. I mean, if I had a couple of days, or if I'm going from one city to the next or one country to the next and it became cumbersome, then I didn't. But in my early days, I did. Now, hardly ever. If I want to play the golf course, I just go see the director of golf. They set me up with the clubs. I always have my cleats or my golf shoes, because I use them on the course.
Sure.
For traction and other things. So I always bring a couple of sleeves of balls. Well, just one. I only need one. I'm so good. A glove. And but I don't take not as much. And also the added expense now of, you know, it's another bag.
Right. Right.
In the olden days, I used to wrap up all my clothes like little sausages, and I'd put them in my club glove with my tripod, and it worked out real well. But I've had to change and modify how I travel with all my equipment.
And traveling's not as much fun. How many days a year are you on the road?
Not as much as I used to be because of the downturn in the economy, but times quite a bit. I would say goodbye to the wife and kids and say, I'll be back in 2 months, and I would just take off and go, and, you know, I'd have X amount, and then I'd come back home maybe for a little bit, and I was gone again.
Wow. You'd be gone that long?
Yes.
Oof.
Yes.
That's hard for
everybody. That's how I still am married, have successful marriage.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder.
The key to a successful marriage is not being around. Sorry, sweetheart, I didn't mean that.
Yeah, I know. Well, she's listening, and the kids are going, yeah, thanks, Dad. favorite golf courses that you've captured?
Oh, it's like asking me who are my favorite ex-girlfriends or what's my favorite single malt. whiskey.
Yeah, I wouldn't ask about your girlfriends. We can get to the alcohol later.
I can't remember them anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's real hard for me to say favorites because there's so many different ilks or kinds of golf courses. I mean, you have links courses, you have parkland courses, you have desert courses, you have courses in exotic places in islands like the Azores, the Outer Hebrides in Scotland, Sicily. That's not that terribly exotic, but it was fun. So I think anytime you go to a place and you stand in the first tee box and you look out over the fairway and you look at your surrounds, the environment, and you say, you know what? I'm a lucky man to be alive. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I think they would be my favorite golf courses. I know I didn't give you anything specific there.
That's okay.
But I've certainly enjoyed golf in Alberta, where the mountains go from here straight up to heaven. You plane down between them. I've enjoyed that. And
Canada.
Like I say, remote places. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. The Lynx courses, obviously, in Ireland, I'm partial, but, you know,
I would
enjoy
think so.
My trip to Scotland as well. The next one, the next course. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, yeah. Are you a student of golf course architecture? Do you know when you're shooting who designed the course and how you would approach that as a photographer?
As a general rule, yes. I continue to read up on it, and there's a website that I look at on a regular basis, and there are people that know an awful lot.
Which website is that?
GCA.com, golfclubatlas.com. There are a lot of very, very knowledgeable people on there, some involved in the business, some who are just passionate about it, and some who are curious. But it is a wonderful source for everything golf course architecture.
I'll put that in the show notes so that if people want to take a look at that too,
yeah,
they can click on it there.
Yeah, that's an excellent source for people that are interested.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, I'm always interested. You know, you can go to some courses and you say, you know, that may look like a Fozzy, or maybe it's a Nicholson, or it's totally different and you're curious.
Does it have an impact on how you approach your shooting? If you know,
it depends on who's hiring me. If I'm being hired by an architect, then the architect is the star. I'm not the star.
Yeah.
If I'm going to shoot a resort, I have to create attractive, pretty images. Don't mean to use that word, but attractive images that will stop the reader long enough to read the copy. And if I have done that, I've created a good image.
Mm-hmm.
So the resort will want me to create that hero shot. If I'm shooting for an architect, that goes out the door. I can do that on my own time, but if I'm being hired by an architect, I have to make the architect. I have to take his particular nuance or what is special about his bunkering or whatever other facet that he has that is a recognizable trait of that architect, and I have to make them look good. That's something I learned a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
It all depends on who's signing the check.
Sure, of course.
And, you know, you always ask the client, what would you like to achieve from this shoot? Good. Sometimes they say, you just go do your stuff, which is always nice.
But does that make it harder? When it's just leave it up to you?
It certainly puts some pressure on you. They obviously have seen some work of yours before that they liked, and there's a standard that you have to adhere to. Yes, it does, but I relish that. That every time I go out, there's a standard I have to adhere to, and I have to push the envelope, and I have to do it better, make it better each time.
Wow.
You can't just go out and point it and push a button and say, okay, I'm done the job now, send me my check. Hmm. No, each one is different. Golf courses are like women. They come in various shapes and sizes, and each one of them has their own inherent beauty. And my job is to dig down deep, find that inherent beauty, expose it, and illustrate it to those that are interested in it. So therein lies the challenge, finding that inherent beauty. It's not always evident, and the weather doesn't always accommodate, but no matter how challenging or challenged a golf course, there's a gem in there somewhere, and that's what motivates me, is to go find that gem.
Yeah, I think of golf as a arrogant, vengeful mistress in many ways.
Mm-hmm. It is a cruel mistress, as you well know if you play.
Yeah, because it just, you know, you just can't get away from it. Mm-hmm. Not that I would know what it's like to have a mistress, because I don't. Are you allowed to draw? Are you comfortable dropping a name of an architect and when you were hired, when that company was signing the check, of what you needed to be looking for in their design? Would you mind sharing that?
No, but I will tell you, and I won't mention the gentleman's name, but it's where I learned the lesson in the first place.
Please tell me stories, Aidan.
There are two golf courses that I photographed for this designer, who over the years has done very, very good work. And I sent the images back to his office. And I waited about a week, and I didn't hear anything. And then I called the gentleman who was working for this particular architect, and I said, just touch and base, did you get the images? And he said, yeah. He said, everyone just absolutely loves your images. I said, oh, good, I'm pleased. However, so-and-so. The boss doesn't like them. I said, okay, fair enough. I said, you know, I like to learn from every situation. Why was that? And he said, because it was your art, not his. That's where I learned that lesson. You know, who are you shooting for? What
wow.
do they want? And you have to make the client happy, not you. So that was a very valuable lesson.
But and not all golf course architects have the egos that make them write books. There's one over there, and I think we're talking about the same guy.
I think that there are a number of architects that have egos, and I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
That's what maybe makes them...
get more work.
Yeah, and also... but I think that that was a fair comment. I don't know whether I had that anything to do with ego or not. I thought it was a very, very fair comment.
Yeah,
and I've learned from it, and I have no problem with what he said.
No, it's a fabulous comment. It really. Did you have to go back and reshoot?
No. No.
Good.
No.
Good. What happens if you schedule yourself for 2 days? Let's start talking about taking pictures on a golf course. Best time of day to take a picture on a golf course?
Basically, it's 2 hours after the sun comes. The window of opportunity within that 2 hours after the sun comes up and 2 hours before the sun goes down. Now, it will vary with the topography. If you have a course that, let's say in Washington, state of Washington, Sahali, I think it is, or in the Carolinas, where the fairways are tree-lined,
mm-hmm.
well, it takes a long time for the sun to get high enough so the sun can come down on the green and on the flag. Mm. The quality of the light gets more harsh and contrasty as it goes up. So therefore, you're going to have to shoot earlier in the afternoon and shoot later in the morning. Now, if you're out in the desert, it goes really, really fast, and there's nothing there. If there are no mountains around impeding it.
Arizona...
Yes.
Type of
Yeah. Now, if you're, you know, if it's a Lynx course in Ireland, Scotland, or let's say Bend and Dunes, it goes pretty fast.
Yeah,
I know it's probably I'm sure it goes at the same speed. It seems it goes really, really
right,
fast.
Right.
So basically, the soft light. You don't want to shoot at midday because it's harsh and it's contrasty.
Right.
And if you wanted me to take a photograph of your wife, I wouldn't take her out at midday and take a photograph of her because she would have deep sockets. I wouldn't see her eyes. I would take it in the afternoon when it's nice and warm and it's soft, and she will look as beautiful as she is.
Interesting. You were saying Bend and Dunes is now you're on the coast, mm-hmm. and you're going to get you can get a very harsh light late in the day as the sun is low or not.
Not something that I've experienced.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it all softens up, even
yes.
if there's not. But shadows give you texture. They give definition. Is there
yes,
a value?
Do. Oh, yeah, of course. And yes, but that also depends on the angle of the light, what you're shooting. That's why it's I photograph just about everything. Well, as the preponderance of the work I do is shot at a 90-degree angle to the sun. So this particular course is extremely challenging because...
And we're talking about the course that I live next to.
Yes, mm-hmm. It's extremely challenging because if you were to go look at a Google map of it, you will see that just about all of the holes are orientated east-west, mm-hmm. which means if you stand on the tee box, you're looking straight into the sun or the sun's behind you and the lighting is flat. Now, if it's coming from the north or the south, it's coming in at 90 degrees, then you see the texture in the grass. Now you have nice shadowing in the bunker, as opposed to the bunker just being a blob of light brown or white. But now it has some shape to it. So it's like if you were to think about, if you were to get a light and hold it out here, you know, past your ear and cross light your face, now you will see what it does. The nose will cast a little shadow. There will be a roundness. As opposed to if you just took it and pointed it straight at you from where your nose is, then it's going to be bland and devoid of...
So what tricks are there? What can you do for a course that is going east to west? You can't change that. What do you have to do with that?
Well, you have to be very creative. You have to... Sometimes you can hide the sun. Let's say if you're shooting into the sun, you can find a tree or a tree branch to hide it, and you'll have a nice high key shot, and uh-huh. you can have a very dramatic shot. When it's coming right over your shoulder and from behind, and if it's a shot that I definitely want to have, then I will wait till the very last moment, so that the quality of the light is very warm and soft. But always, I want to get some cross lighting for texture.
Okay,
and shape.
And if you schedule two mornings and an afternoon for a shoot, is that a normal amount of time that you would schedule for an 18-hole course, or how much time do you dedicate to it generally?
Depends on how much the client wants to pay for.
Yeah,
whether it's one
so you have
day,
a day,
two
type
day,
of day
days.
Rate.
Yeah. I have a package rate for depending on how many images, and then I will create a number of images from which they get to select. Whatever it is, and the average can be shot in a day. It can be shot in a day if they want the smaller package, giving the afternoon light and the morning light.
Mm-hmm.
But the longer you're on a golf course, the better, because you will see different things every day. And I've been back to courses where I've been hired 2-3 times. And I've scratched my head saying, you know what, I don't know if I can get anything more out of this. And then I go back and I surprise myself because, you can. Well, you also ramp it up a bit more because now you really have to perform. They've invested in you. They've trusted you one more time. And now you've got to warrant that trust. Yeah. And so, you start, what if? You start thinking outside the box a little bit. But it's all dependent. It all depends on the weather.
Yeah, let's talk about the sky.
And the angle of the light.
Yeah, let's talk about the sky, not just the sun. Now we're talking about cloud coverage, various cloud coverage, overcast skies, and blue skies versus different types of clouds in the sky. What's optimal for you? What do you look for? What do you hope for?
Interesting clouds in the sky, but with unimpeded sun. By the same token, there are wonderful images that have been created by lots of very talented photographers where the light has been subdued. One of the images that I have that people really, really like was shot on a foggy morning. A golf image that I knew there was something special about the hole, although the surrounds just, it wasn't very attractive. But I knew in my heart there was something special there. And I couldn't find it. And then on the way to the airport, I had a couple of hours, which I was really looking forward to getting there early and having a couple of nice Bloody Marys before I got on the long flight. And I said,
bloody long flight.
Yes. Get back there and take a look. And I got in, there was this fog on it. And I looked at the picture and said, oh my goodness, there it is. Because it had a mystique way of blanking out everything that I didn't like in the image. And it made it just a very, very simple, special image. So to answer your question, clear sun, obviously interesting clouds in the sky. But that doesn't mean you can have a really dark, dark, violent sky and you get a couple of shafts of light at the right time. Magic.
Magic.
Patience. And being in the right place. There's a modicum of luck. And there's some skill. There's a melange or a mixture of all the above that's tossed in the mix to, you know, when it comes to creating a good image.
Do you set up on a tripod and just wait and hope for the right moment? Or are you, okay, I'm here, click, click. I stand over here, click, click. Or do you find it necessary to use a tripod for what you're doing?
Oh, I always use a tripod.
You always use a tripod?
Always. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Tripod, cable release, mirror locked up, oftentimes sandbag on top of the tripod, or take my camera bag and weigh it down so that it's steady so there's no vibration.
What shutter speed do you try to keep?
Well, it will depend on what my aperture is. But in the olden days when I shot with
film,
the wonderful Velvia, I'd never used a meter or in-house metering. Everything was shot at F16, F11, F11 and a half, F16. Three brackets at half a second. Because the light, if it's the same light all the time, basically. Mm-hmm. So you didn't need, then that's for a shot. So when you're shooting at a half a second or a quarter of a second, you've got a big old camera, especially a long 30th, lens on it.
15th?
Now maybe I do with the new setup.
Mm-hmm.
But it will depend. I mean, if you're shooting it wide open, you want to create a special effect, then the speed will be faster. If you want to get as much depth of field as possible and you shut it down to 16 or 22, I'm sure there are purists that say that F11 is the perfect one, but whatever blows up their skirt. so then it'll vary.
And what about the processing part of it? Are you becoming very proficient at Photoshop, or do you stick it in the photo app and just let it ride? What do you do?
No, every image needs manipulation, whether it's, you know, tweaking the color, whether it's cleaning up all the divots, whether it's taking care of the rakes that are in the bunker. In the olden days, I would chase off down a hill, take all the bunkers out and toss them away, then run back up the hill and think I was having a heart attack before the next foursome came. But nowadays, I still try to remove them. Prevention is better than the cure, but I can take care of it in Photoshop. It takes a few seconds to remove the bunkers or whatever cleanup. You want the image to be the best that it can be without it being looking like a lady that has too much mascara on it.
Some of the images that I'm not even going to talk about yours, about myself, is I tend to boost the saturation just to give it more color. Am I overdoing it here? Do you use a lot of saturation, increase your saturation on the images, or you don't find
only,
you don't
only,
need to?
Only if I feel that it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I shoot with a warming cross polarizing filter anyway, which adds a little, you know, some contrast to it, some deeper colors. You will see a lot of images where the oversaturation is overdone, and it's, you know, you should apply the various tools to the image to the point that no one would even know that you did it. And they'll know if you overdid it. Mm-hmm. So there's a fine line.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I do. It's part and parcel of everything we do
Isn't
these
Photoshop
days.
Amazing?
Yes, it is. It's a wonderful tool. In the olden days, we used, you know, we different things. If you processed and printed black and white, you dodged and you burned and you did various things in there.
Oh, I miss the smell of being in a black and
white. I don't. When I went to school, we had what we call the tunnel, and there was like maybe 20 of us in there, and we're all in there. We're rocking our fixture back and forth, and it was dark in there. And, you know, you really couldn't see anyone. But there was this lady, God bless her. She was a beautiful, beautiful woman from Texas. Her name was Julie. But we could tell when she went by because she had some perfume that it was stronger than the fixture.
Well, listen, I need to make an announcement or two. And here's what I'd like to do with you is can we come back? I would like to get a tip from you, a photography tip, on what to avoid, if you can think about that for a moment, what to avoid when taking golf course photographs. Can you do that, or do you have a different idea?
No, that's fine. I'll give it some thought.
In our next episode, author Anthony Pioppi, who was on Golf Smarter in 2006, returns to discuss the new edition of his book, To the Nines. Have you ever played a nine-hole golf course? I'm not referring to executive par three courses. That doesn't count. I'm talking about a legitimate par 36 nine-hole track. With all the complaints that golf takes too long, real estate is too expensive, blah-de-dee-blah-blah-blah, we've heard 1,000 times before, maybe this is the type of infusion that can get more players back on the course. Anthony's book looks at 19 nine-hole layouts across the United States that date back to the 1890s and really are the roots of the game in this country. It's a fascinating book and a fun conversation with Anthony Pioppi. Now, let's get back to Aidan Bradley with his advice on what we should avoid when taking pictures on the golf course. In the video, we'll also get to see some of his work from around the world. To see this and many other video golf tips from our podcast guests, go to YouTube.com, then search and subscribe to Golf Smarter TV.
Don't do it when you're playing golf. Because as we all know, if you play golf on a regular basis, golf is tough enough. And to be taking a camera in and out of your pocket, A, you're going to upset the people you're playing with because you're going to slow them down. We would like to move at a decent pace. And you should be concentrated on your game of golf. If you want to go on the golf course afterwards, approach the owners, the director of golf, the pro, and say, is it possible I can go out when it's slow? I'd like to just take a couple of photographs. Explain to them what you're going to do with the photographs. That way you'll never get in trouble. Other than that, I would say if you do get out there and you're doing it for fun, so you can put something on your wall, walk around, find the right time of day, find something that appeals to you, that you really like. Take an image, create the image. You're done. If you don't like it, take a look at it and figure out what was it that I didn't like about it. And then there are a plethora of gorgeous coffee table books that have stunning images created by some of the best in the world. And look at those images and see what it is that you liked about their image. And then the next time you go out, try and replicate it and have fun with it.